dogs. And I do source code audits, and then people hire me to give a talk about what I found. But that means usually the stuff I found is covered by an NDA, so I can't really talk about any of the details, which is sad in this case because I've actually seen the SMB code in Windows, but what can you do? Yeah. So I'm an IT security consultant. Usually I run a small company, and usually I'm at customer sites, not in my office. I get basically paid for ranting. Show up at the customer, tell them what they do wrong, and oftentimes they call me when it's really too late. So what are we doing here? Actually, I think that should be the topic. What are we doing, the industry as a whole, the security industry, right? So we touched a bit on this already. Problem statement: the software is insecure, and we know we have a problem, but we don't really know how to handle it. We've tried a few things. They turn out to be expensive and not very effective, and somehow we need to focus on the important stuff, and that's harder than it sounds. So how do we do that? I hope this concept is something that many people here will know already, but I'm going to introduce it anyway. TCB is the Trusted Computing Base. It's a concept from the early 80s. I'm talking about it here because that was one of the few parts of our history where we actually achieved something in regard of security. So this actually helped. The idea with the TCB is that you call the part of the system that you need to trust because it does the important stuff like the access checks, the authentication. That part you call TCB and you look harder on it. You make sure it's really, really secure. So, for example, if you call MV on Unix, the move command, it doesn't actually check any permissions. It tells the kernel you want to move something, and the kernel does the permission checks. The kernel is part of the TCB, move is not. And we want to be move, not the kernel. Right? That's the whole idea of the TCB concept. You want to be in a place where you delegate all the hard stuff somewhere else, and it's not your fault if stuff breaks. So to make sure people understand this, because this is often misunderstood, TCB is not the nice stuff you can trust. It's the stuff you have to trust, because if it breaks, you're doomed. Right? A TCB is not nice. It's something we have to make sure is nice. This is like a work order. It's not a status. I'm trying to show some pictures to illustrate the point. You want to have the TCB as small as possible. This little way, there's only like 1.5 meters in size. And if you want to come in, you have to go over this bridge, right? So that's your product. The TCB is very small and thin. And that's the auditor, right? So easy enough concept. Why do we have this concept? So the idea is that we can concentrate the auditing effort on the important part. And the TCB is all about identifying the important part. We want to make effective use of our time. And I'm saying this not as me, as the auditor. I don't care. I get paid per day. You know, if you don't have a TCB concept and have to look on everything, that's good for me. But if you want to get the most out of an audit, source code audit, you want to make sure that I look at the important part and not everything. So if we can get the TCB small enough, we may actually be able to look at it completely, every line of code, even have a correctness proof maybe. Also, the idea is that we have something that can be measured. It's not just a touchy-feely thing. We can measure if this actually helps make the TCB smaller. We can get away from security theater, that's the hope at least, and have some rational argument about if what we just did actually helps. The expectation, obviously, and you have a small protective crust and large delicious interior, but in reality it's more like a sewage pipe. And that's a problem in our process. That's entirely our fault. This is not a natural thing. It doesn't just happen. We do it like this. And we need to get rid of this. But instead, what we do is we keep building bigger Titanics. I could have done a little statistics about the Samba code size over the years, but I guess everyone here knows what it looks like. As long as we keep adding stuff, we make the problem harder. So the central idea of this talk is that TCP is not something that is a fixed concept, but it's in fact relative to what you are trying to protect. And to make sure that this is actually understood, I have a little example, a lamp stack. So why do I have a lamp stack? This is a Samba conference, right? So it's a little trick. So I'm trying to have an example that's close enough to what everybody's doing that you can recognize yourself, but it's far away enough that nobody feels insulted. And it has PHP, so we can all feel good about bashing it, right? So another good example would be web browsers, because they keep growing and growing, and people add ridiculous security stuff, like we put the browser in a sandbox. All your banking data is in the browser. Who cares if it's in a sandbox or not? You know? So we have a lamp stack. Let's make it more secure. And this has been taking 20 years, right? You start out young, you know, repair some stuff. 20 years later, what do we have? Our Linux is now hardened and has full disk encryption. And Apache is running as the user www, not root anymore. MySQL is running as user MySQL. PHP is an Apache module, or maybe it's a fast CGI module, doesn't really matter at this point. Also not running as root. So success, right? Let's have a look. So Linux obviously is still in the TCP, right? The first point where you realize where this is going. Let's extend the concept a bit to make my point. In the 80s, we had a different premise than now. In the 80s, we had multi-user systems with terminals, and users actually used the terminals to log into the same physical system and do stuff on the system. There was no real separation between database and main application. And the goal was to protect user A from user B. The user accounts on the operating system actually separated actual users. And today, we don't have terminals anymore. Users come in over HTTP. Applications are running under their own UID. The database is separated from the application, so this all looks good, but it turns out user accounts are no longer used to separate users, they are used to separate parts of the TCP. And those parts have the same access to the data anyway, so this is not actually doing anything. That's my argument here. So to illustrate this, in the 80s we worried about passwords, and we said, okay, let's split etc passwd, put the password hashes into etc shadow and make sure only root can access etc shadow. And today we're still worried about passwords, so we put them in the database and give PHP and Apache access to the whole thing, right? So clearly something is going wrong here. And I think the key to solving this is to figuring out what we're actually trying to protect. We want to protect the data. Right? And that means the database is still in the TCP because it has the data. Okay? And that means this is, if you remember one thing from this talk, the database could be running as root. Wouldn't compromise security because the important stuff is in the database. If something is in the TCP, that basically means it could be running as root. So if you think that's bad, just stay tuned. How does PHP access the database? Usually, PHP has one database account that all the select and update statements go through, and that database account has full access. And this is done for performance reasons. Obviously, that's always the excuse. PHP has a pool of open connections, so there's no authentication done before each access. It's done initially in the beginning, and then you just keep the connection around. So the consequence is obviously PHP is in the TCP. Ooh. PHP could be running as root. It wouldn't matter. Right? So we need to change this. What about Apache? We haven't figured Apache yet. Apache obviously sees all the data coming by. And if you do your TLS endpoint in Apache, it also sees the secret keys from your TLS. So it's also could also be running as root also in the TCP. So what's going on here? I have a vast collection of those. So we wasted 20 years, basically, right? So let's come up with some ideas. And this is more like a brainstorming thing. Let's see. So we could split up PHP. We could have two PHPs. One is for the read-only statements, the select statements, and one is for the admin part that actually needs to write to the database. And then we need to have some kind of routing, so all the read-only statements go to the read-only PHP, and all the write statements go through the write PHP. So what have we gained if we do that? Sounds like a good idea, right? So what do we gain? SQL injection in the read-only part can't write, so that's a big win. However, the write part is still in the TCP, and PHP in the TCP should be something we want to get rid of altogether, okay? But let's not stop there. What do we mean by we need to protect the data? Does it mean we only care about writing to the data, or does it mean reading all the data is also a breach? Because if it is a breach, a full compromise, then the read-only PHP is also in the TCP, so we gained nothing. Just wasted time. So the lesson is it's not that easy. Maybe we need a different perspective. So German Telekom used to own the whole network in Germany. So they had something called Bildschirmtext, and they owned both the network and the services. So nowadays, they only own the network, not the services. If any of the services is insecure, Telekom is not liable. Maybe we need to be where Telekom is now. Our services should be just passing through stuff and not be the faulty hacked component. Just move data, and then you can still do damage. You can do a denial of service at least, but it's not that bad, okay? Maybe we should try to do this. Solution is encryption, obviously. Everybody's doing encryption these days. So let's see if encryption works. Let's encrypt the data in the database. That's actually something that's been sold as a product these days for cloud computing, you know? So to make this work, only the user can have the key to the database. Otherwise, the hacker would steal the key when he hacks the database, right? So let's say we do real encryption, end-to-end encryption. The key is with the user. Decryption is done with JavaScript in the browser, the good stuff. And that means we can remove most of the active components from the TCP. However, we can't do any operations on the data. So this is not realistic. This is only good if you want to have a file sharing service. So what do we do? This is another thing that's being sold right now, homomorphic encryption. So I have a few slides. I want to skip most of them. To me, it's just it's an academic pipe dream. You can make money with it, like grant money, but that's it. Basically, it weakens crypto enough so that the operations you agreed on beforehand become possible. But weakening crypto is not a strong selling point, right? So, also it rules out stuff that people actually want to do, like OLAP or data warehousing. If you didn't think of it beforehand in your database model, then it's not possible anymore, and that's the very reason why we use SQL in the first place. So let's do it differently. We still encrypt, but we don't just encrypt the payload, we encrypt the username too, and then if someone steals the database, he doesn't know which data set belongs to which user, okay? People do this, usually it's done by some bullshit crypto like this. The technical term for this, if you haven't heard it, is encryption. So this is obviously worthless. If you have a secret key, it's also worthless because the where do you store it? It has to be somewhere, and somewhere can be hacked, right? So that's not good. And usually that has to be PHP, and you know we do all this because we assume PHP is being hacked. So that doesn't work. Okay, let's use public key crypto. And this looks good, but it means that basically the JavaScript in the browser will encrypt something and put the blob in the database. And that means if I can guess what made the blob, I have the public key. I can do the same step that the browser does. If I can guess the username, I can compare the blobs. So as long as what I'm encrypting is can be iterated through and guessed, this doesn't work either. What are we going to do? So crypto is difficult. It's not the solution. It's only part of the solution. At most. Maybe it's not even that. And I think the key is to delegate access control. Maybe we should delegate in the other direction. We shouldn't have PHP authenticating to the database. We should have the end user authenticate to the database. So let's say every user gets its own database UID. And that account has all the access rights the user needs, which is usually append only to some shared state and can read and write his own profile data, and that's it. And the Apache and PHP only pass through the credentials, right? We're getting somewhere, right? However, PHP and Apache still all see all the usernames and passwords going through, so that's not enough. They're still in the TCP, so this is a typical security thing. You know, you need to cover all the ground, obviously, otherwise it's useless. Okay, so how do we get the web server and PHP out? Let's stay with the idea that the database has different accounts for every user. So maybe we do some kind of challenge response thing. The database doesn't only have the username, but a key too, and sends that key to the user. But that doesn't help, right? Because the web server and PHP can still see the token and use it to do other stuff. So that doesn't work. Still in the TCP. So maybe we need to do some random stuff. You know, random is good in crypto. So let's send out a random challenge. The database sends it out. Otherwise, we can't get PHP and the web server out, right? So the problem is Apache and PHP still see the token, still could do bad things. However, there's a bigger problem here. HTTP itself is stateless, so we need to have one challenge response per request, and that doesn't scale very well, so nobody's doing that. But if you have a thick client, you could theoretically do it. So let's say you have a thick client and it does XML, JSON, whatever, XML, RPC requests, SOAP to your backend, and every request is secured with browser crypto, and you put in a hash of the request in the token so it can't be reused. That's good, right? Well, no. So what about PHP? The problem is databases don't usually do challenge response crypto, so we would have to have a little proxy in front of the database. And what are you going to implement that? It's probably going to be PHP, so we haven't gained anything. Also, people who do this usually don't use PHP. It's even worse. They have some big JVM there. So in practice, it's bigger and worse than what it was before. So we're doing something wrong here, right? Maybe we need to look at the problem differently. Let's look at servers and not processes. Let's look at this, right? So this has a few more components than just Apache PHP. What of this is in the TCP? If it sees unencrypted data, it's in the TCP, right? If it's hacked, then the data is gone. We want to protect the data, so what can we do to reduce the amount of red in this slide? Maybe we are approaching this wrong. So let's say maybe we don't really need to protect the data per se, but if the attacker sees plain text data, that's not so bad, as long as doesn't see plain text data from other users. So if we can somehow cage in the attacker, so all he can see is the data of this user, so the user could only hack itself. And we can somehow prevent the data from being stored or sent out. Maybe that would be something. That's an approach, right? So how do we do this? We would have to have one process per user. Otherwise, you could just keep the data in memory. And then the next user could potentially see in-memory copies of data from the previous user. So one process per user. And we need to make sure it can't write to disk. And it can't keep data around. So this is good. We're onto something here, right? So we split off unimportant stuff like the UI. We handle connections in separate short-lived processes that are killed immediately when the request is done, so no memory is lying around. And if we could somehow enforce separation, for example, with different operating system users, that would work. And writing can be prevented with read-only mounts, for example. So there are ways to do this. They're a bit kludgy, but this can actually be done. So this is good. We should do this, okay? If we do this, and we move the TLS endpoint down, you can actually see some progress. And this is better than it looks, because the code we most care about is the code we wrote ourselves as a company. We reuse Apache. If there's a bug in Apache, that's bad, but it's not our code. So the code we most care about that probably has the worst quality is the little glue code we wrote ourselves. And this is the stuff we just moved out of the TCB. So the next step would be sandboxing. And this is also being sold all over the place right now. And it's not all bad, I think. It's growing on me. I used to be all against sandboxing, but it's growing on me. So basically, I don't trust the software I'm running here. I want to cage it in. Reduce the damage it can do. So these are the old school techniques you can do. You can make sure it doesn't run a super user, obviously. So that also includes it's not running as a kernel component, like SMB on Windows. Right? That is also up. This is all Unix-based, but the principle applies to Windows too. The problem is if we have some sandbox and it's based on rules, same is true for firewalls, by the way, we can't really expect the admin to configure those rules. Configuring rules is hard, and you actually need a level of understanding of how the software works that most people don't have. So what usually happens is that people use some kind of training mode. You know, they run the software a few times, and then everything that it did, they think is okay and is allowed from now on. And that kind of sort of works, but it doesn't include all the error paths that haven't been triggered yet. So this, I don't think this is the solution, and that was the main reason I was against sandboxing for a while. But the tooling has changed. We can now have self-sandboxing. We can now have a process that applies rules to itself, and that means the developer who wrote the process can make the rules. So you can say stuff like, if I ever call listen or execve, shoot me in the head. I've been hacked. Right? This is a great idea. We should all be doing this. Because now we actually have the tools to do the lock-in that was necessary to remove all the other stuff from the TCB. So we can use this to prevent writing to disk, for example, and to prevent outgoing TCP connections. We can use a firewall and read-only mounts too, but I think this is more elegant. Let's put this together in a slightly different way to show how process can be made here. So let's say we have a typical web server. What does a web server need to do? It needs to read files so it can send them out, obviously. It needs to accept incoming connections so it can take HTTP requests. It needs to initiate connections to the database or FastCGI, and it needs to write a file to the disk, the log file, right? So all of this is actually needed by the web server. So we can't say, well, for security reasons, you can't write anymore. We still need the logs. How do we approach this? Step one, we make sure the web server doesn't write the logs to the file system. It writes it to standard out. And then standard out is a pipe to a different process, and that process writes to disk. This concept is surprisingly old. It's from the late 90s. Yet, almost nobody's doing it. If we do this, we have 25% progress. And this is the most important part, you could say, the write access to disk. We have a web server that doesn't need to write to disk anymore. Isn't that awesome? But we're not done yet. So when you start the web server, you could fork off a little copy of it and say, this copy is now the broker. And if I need to read a file, I can't do it myself, but I can ask the broker to do it. And the idea is that the web server is a gigabyte and the broker is 10K, and I can audit the broker and understand that it works. So if I maintain a Unix domain socket on Windows, you don't need a Unix domain socket, but there are other ways. This is a concept that can work on both Unix and Windows. So all the hairy and dangerous operations you don't do yourself, but you ask a broker. And the broker can be yourself. You just fork off in the beginning, fork a copy. So the problem is obviously asking the broker is IPC, and IPC costs performance. This is true. So there's some ways around this. If, for example, you do a lot of file system access, then you can do other methods to cage that in. But in general, the concept is not that slow. You should do benchmarks before discarding. So if we do this, what have we gained? If we do this, we can actually ensure that the main process doesn't do anything dangerous. It's still bad if it fails or is owned, but it's not that bad. All it can do is stuff that the broker allows it to do. The broker still stays in the TCB, but the broker is tiny. Okay? So how do we prevent the memory staying around? How do we prevent the main process that it doesn't keep memory around and the next guy who does a request gets the data sent that it's stored in main memory? Even if we say you can't write to disk, it could still just keep the data in memory, right? So how do we prevent that? We make the processes short-lived. And this is, again, a performance problem. But it's not your performance problem. It's the operating system's performance problem, right? If we do this, all of these steps. Look at the progress. So I'm not showing you this to say everyone should be doing this, and maybe it applies to Samba in some way, maybe it doesn't, but something can be done. We're not helpless here. If we really wanted to do something, we could. Let's apply this. And see, we also got the web server out of the dangerous path. The broker stays in the TCB. Obviously, the TLS endpoint is still dangerous. OpenSSL bugs will still kill us. We really need a new SSL library. Google has one called Boring SSL, and they should push that more and make sure you don't need Go to build it. So that's basically what I was trying to say here. Conclusion: TCB can be minimized, but only relative to specific scenarios. For SQL injection, you can totally get Apache and PHP out of the TCB. This can be done. For cross-site scripting, you can get PHP out of the TCB. There are solutions for that. For file system access, networking, and IPC, you can get both Apache and PHP out of the TCB, but there are probably other attacks I didn't think about so far that need a different approach. But for every scenario that you can think of, there's something you can do. You just need to do it. If everyone did this, and I know this is a cliche, but if everyone did this, things would be much easier. And it wouldn't be that our software is magically secure now, but now we have a fighting chance if we want to audit something because the broker is small. We only really need to make sure the broker is secure. In the end, you still have to have good code quality, though. So there's no silver bullet. We're not trying to get rid of audits here. We try to make them possible. So when I go auditing at a customer, usually they say, well, we have this huge product, but we have 2 weeks, so you look at this little part here. And I mean, I'm good, but I can't, I'm not a magician, so let's make sure the little part I get to look at is actually important. A little how-to recap. So if you write an application first and then expect the OS to help you, it's probably not going to work. What you need to do is look at what the operating system provides and then design your application around that. The mechanisms are there. If you use them, you'll be much safer. But they probably didn't think of your scenario when they wrote them. So it's not, you can't just design something out of thin air and then expect the rest of the world's infrastructure to fit. You have to fit. So memory leaks are a thing of the past if you have short-lived processes. Horrible exploits are gone if all you can hack runs with minimal access rights and can't really do anything. We should all be doing this. So if you need help, email me. Questions?
So Samba and other servers, other SMB servers, are file systems. You know, how do you get them out of the TCP? What parts of them could theoretically be removed from the TCP?
So I think one of the important lessons from the bedlock problem are that SMB itself is a file system, but there's a ton of RPC interfaces around it. Not all of that has to be in the TCP. If you can make sure that those admin-only stuff is not actually running or is keeping the rest of the stuff running with high privileges, if you separate that out so the stuff that the user can call only has the access rights that user should have, then you can remove it. It's a splitting up game, basically. You can't get all of Samba out of the TCP, but you can delegate as much as you can to the operating system. And how to do that is a matter of the simple parts. You can't have a generic answer for that. You have to look at all the small problems you have and see how you can find a good match.
Okay.
Hi. So the issue in many cases is one of compatibility. Right, so you start off with one set of ACLs and then you write sort of a server piece that sort of emulates a different type of ACLs. And the question is, how do you map that down to something in the core? Sometimes that works, like Solaris, as you probably know, they try to basically map Windows and NTFS4 ACLs right down into the kernel. But in many cases, just a very complex problem. So it's not so clear how you do this in the general case. The other interesting observation is when you go back to most of the really bad attacks in the last 10 years, none of them were actually done in that space. They all were done in kernel space. So how do you actually protect your TCP from the bad doors? Any thoughts on that?
Yes, so actually that's something that has been talked about for many years. Even though, as soon as Linux started, there was a famous posting by Andrew Tenenbaum. And he said, we should not be having this monolithic crap here. We should have a microkernel. So there are ways to use these concepts on the kernel too and make sure that drivers don't have to run as ring zero. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. That depends on the architecture. But so my problem is that these excuses are often used to keep everyone down when all you need is to be compatible to these 15 people and three have the problem. So I'm saying you should try to make sure that someone who's running on a platform that supports offloading, then use that. Offload as much security as you can to the operating system. If you go to the Linux people and tell them, we could be more secure if you add this, I think that could be an argument that could be made, and maybe someone will do it. I mean, Google could certainly do it. Google did it for Android, you know? So why wouldn't they be able to do it for Windows, ACLs? Windows did it for Linux. I don't know if you saw that. So
I don't want to hijack my question, which is coming up, but in terms of Windows ACLs inside Linux, Andreas Grumbacher, who wrote the POSIX draft ACLs for Linux, has a large patch set that implements NFS v4 ACLs, which are close enough to Windows semantics for Linux. And right now that's being blocked on a couple of somewhat intransigent individuals in the Linux kernel community, naming no names, but VFS maintainers. So that's not that's not something for Google to fix. That code exists, and if they want to put it in Samba and Ganesha and the NFS server, will be very, very happy. But anyway, so I was going to talk about... I absolutely agree with you in terms of minimizing the amount of code that needs to be run essentially as system or root or whatever. The problem is we have a boatload of working code. My prime example for this is NMBD. And this is my fault. I rewrote the last rewrite of NMBD, and it runs as root. There is no reason that code needs to run as root. Absolutely no reason whatsoever. But the problem with it is it exists, it just works, it hasn't had a security bug in about 5 years. It's so stable that even vendors who have started on Samba, then moved to their own proprietary SMB services, they still run NMBD because, as someone who should remain nameless said to me, well, it just works, and it means it's a massive bunch of code we don't have to write. So how do you get around something like that? I would love to re-architect NMBD such that it was privileged separation, it wasn't running as root or whatever. The problem is, how do you find the time to take that working code and break it to add a level of security that I know it really needs, but it doesn't have right now? And no, I'm not paying you to do it. Well, because I don't have the money, sorry.
Somebody angry. Yeah, so GCC had a problem like that many years ago when they were in a kind of stasis and nothing got done and people were content with, well, not people, but the developers were content with how well it works. And then someone made a fork, and suddenly competition achieved what couldn't be done 10 years before. I think if you call it like version 2.0 or something, or you know, extended edition, or I don't know, some marketing bullshit, and just give the option and say you could be running this, and it's half the size, and it's running as nobody. Some people would do it. You know, trade magazines would write articles about it. Sometimes you just have to try. It's obviously it's a time budget problem, but if you don't try, it won't get fixed. That's the only way to make sure it doesn't get fixed.
Okay, do we have more questions?
So one of the issues you mentioned is username and passwords, which is really the bane of security. And yet there is strong and fierce resistance to anything else in practice, even though everybody talks about doing something better. And what do we do there? How do we take that out from the TCB?
I think we're stuck with usernames and passwords. I mean, people have tried biometrics and, you know, people have measured the timing when you enter your password to find out if it's really you. And even that, I mean, that has no downsides, right? Even that, nope. So I think at some point we just have to work with it. I think the problem is that most of the proposed alternatives aren't clearly better. They are clearly better to the guy who designs the backend, but they're not clearly better to me as the customer. And if someone proposes something to me, my first question is, is it like the banks trying to give me a new bank card that shifts liability to me? You know, if it looks more secure, then there's probably some downside somewhere that they're not telling me about. So you need to get that out of the way if you want people to move to your system. And nobody does that because people think, you know, if someone objects, oh, they're irrational. Nobody tries to understand why people don't want those systems. I can see myself, you know, if I have a smartphone and it wants me to have some kind of pattern, I go, fuck no. I don't trust these people to have my, you know, fingerprint, whatever. So, yeah, it's a trust thing. You have to establish trust first. You can't just ram stuff down people's throats. Thanks for your time.